Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another edition of In Theo Radio, where we talk about shamanism, psychedelics, and conscious communities and the structures built around them, the people, the places, and the things. This is your captain speaking, Captain Hugh T. Alchemy, formerly Travar Hughes, and I'm very excited to share a very special episode and a very special guest speaker today with you if you are listening. I would like to encourage you to call in because our shows are live, and thus you must also bear with our technical difficulties. Our phone number, if you would like to call in either to listen or if you would like to call in to ask a question, is 347-855-8334. Once again, that's 347-855-8334. And you can call in and ask any questions, or you can just listen until you have a question, and then press 1, and I'll notice your hand is raised in the queue, unmute your line. So, the title of today's show, Cannabis for Lyme and the Natural Reconnection, we have our very special returning guest, Shelley White, who is on the show. Welcome to the show, Shelley.
Hi, Hugh. Thank you.
Oh, great. We got you. And you sound very clear.
Great.
I'm going to read your bio. Shelley White works as a writer and editor and is studying to be an herbalist specializing in Lyme disease and other infectious diseases. Shelley is the author of Cannabis for Lyme Disease and Related Conditions, Scientific Basis and Anecdotal Evidence for Medicinal Use, and is a regular contributor to sites such as Collective Evolution and The Mind Unleashed. She has written for various other sources as well, including Skunk Magazine, Mind Body Green, and Natural News. The topics she most frequently covers include cannabis, psychedelics, pharmaceuticals, infectious diseases, alternative health, and consciousness. Shelley loves reading, learning, and spending time in nature. She's fascinated by plant medicine and plant consciousness, as we all know from the previous episode she did with us. And she credits her drive to continuously learn and connect with plants to her experience with Lyme disease and the healing thereof. Shelley, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me again.
So, where is the party for the book release? And tell us about this book and how it was birthed. You're a mama now.
Well, it was birthed actually by everyone's questions after I wrote my article on my journey with it. And one night, you know, I checked my email and it had been 2 years since I first wrote the article. And I love answering people, don't get me wrong. But I realized I was in one way or another always answering the same questions over and over again. So I thought, why don't I just put them all together in one book? And I contacted a publisher that night and we started the next day.
And what year was that? Was that 2 years ago or this time of year?
No, the book, that was about 6 months ago.
Okay. And so maybe people want to know where they can read your articles and how old your articles are. I think I first was introduced to you because I found you on Collective Evolution and an article you wrote on magic mushrooms for antidepressant substance.
Right. You know, currently the only sites I, you know, have up-to-date articles on are The Mind Unleashed and Collective Evolution, because I choose to focus on writing for sources like that because of the cause they're working towards. So either of those sites are great.
Okay. And how many articles would you say at this point you have up there? Because I know you're a writing fiend.
I don't know. 50? 30?
Holy.
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. You're like an ascended angelic fiend. This is amazing. Wow.
Yeah, or I'm someone who just rants. And people let me.
No, you know, I feel very dwarfed because I read a lot and I didn't know you had that many articles, so I have to go get my reading glasses on and sit in front of the computer for 3 days reading all the articles by Shelley White. So, how long is your book, and what? How does it start? Maybe you can talk about the introduction of it.
Okay, so the book is 260 pages, exactly. You can find it on cannabisforlyme.com. You can find it on Amazon as well, but on cannabisforlyme.com, you can see the entire outline, a detailed outline of everything that's in it. You can actually read the foreword and the preface. That's a really good site to go to if you want to know more about it. Basically, the first part of it is more technical stuff. It talks about the chemical constituents, species and strains, forms and methods of use, which does include detailed recipes for all the different methods, legalities and safety, and then part two talks about all the different symptoms for each chapter and how it can help with those. So part one more explains how it works as a bactericide and killing bacterial infections. And part two shows how it can work to reduce symptom picture during treatment.
I'm checking out the website now as I'm listening to you. It's a really cool website that you have here. And if anyone's listening that has... Excuse me?
I said my publisher did it. Thank you.
Your publisher made this. Oh, and they're the Biomed Publishing Group, Lake Tahoe, California. Excellent. It's very informative, and it looks to me like a really great resource for anyone who's listening that's learning about exploring marijuana and cannabis for healing purposes.
Right.
I can read the introduction here, and so I forgot about the flattery. But by your photographs, you look like a very young person, and younger than most authors. So are we allowed to know your age?
Yes, I am 25.
Could we, for the audience who's listening, maybe as this the first episode, I don't know if we did this in the last episode, can we tell the story of how you contracted Lyme, at what age, and what process you went through?
Yeah, I'll give you the short version. I was 14 when I first remember getting bit by a tick. You know, I live in Texas, the hill country, and although they say there's not Lyme disease here, there is. Clearly. And anyways, I pulled one out from behind my ear, and after that, I started getting a lot of chronic fatigue. I would come home from school and sleep from about 4 p.m. till the next morning and just started getting a bunch of sinus infections. But, you know, I was still able to function. I moved out, went to college after high school, and then I moved to North Carolina when I was 21, and I got bit by a second tick. And everything, it was literally like almost overnight, I just got over 30 symptoms. There was also black mold where I moved, so that definitely played a part. Anyhow, so I was lucky enough to watch a documentary called Under Our Skin. It was more of one of those, like, intuitive things, you know, something about it just says, watch me, because I had been tested for Lyme disease, which is what it's about, and it was always negative, so I had no reason, like, to watch it for personal gain, but I just wanted to watch it, and I realized, oh my gosh, I have Lyme. And so I was lucky to find out, you know, fairly quickly, and I went to see one of the doctors from the actual documentary that following week who treated me conventionally for a little over a year before I decided that, you know, pharmaceuticals were not right for me, and I quit and started studying herbalism because I wanted to understand how to heal myself and what, you know, everything that was going on in my body.
Do you mind if I ask, did they put you on, like, what pharmaceutical?
Hold on. Oh.
Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Totally had the intervention technical difficulty of having children. It's almost a mechanical technical difficulty.
That's not technical. That's not technical. That's human.
Sorry about
anyways,
that. Maybe you ran through the recording area.
No. The pharmaceuticals I was placed on, I don't know, that would be a very long, boring list. I would take about 4 to 6 antibiotics all at once for about 2 weeks and then take a week off and then do a whole different regimen of them. But I can tell you the ones that I was on consistently throughout it all that I do remember, and they were all psychotropic drugs. So that whole year I thought everything was, oh, great, and I was dying, you know, because I was on 4 antidepressants. So, but Dipitman, Cymbalta, Lexapro, Ativan over 10 milligrams a day, Trazodone, and Urotin. So as soon as I decided to go natural, I got really obsessive about what I was putting in my body and started researching the, you know, all the chemicals of everything I was taking, the chemical structures and how those work with our enzyme pathways. And, you know, it's just not enough to look at the sheet that comes with the prescription. You know, they use fancy words, so you don't know what that means. So when I started realizing that, I just became completely disgusted by them. And eventually, after doing Buhner's protocol, I decided to get really, really high one night when I was sulking in self-pity. And the next morning, I woke up, and I felt better than I felt in years. And so
Hold on a second. What were you, I think we, the audience would like to know, and I would like to know, because we're all pot nerds. What were you smoking? What strain were you using?
I was doing Trainwreck at that time.
Okay. And is that an indica or a sativa, as we understand it?
It's pretty balanced. It's sativa dominant, but it has a good amount of indica as well.
And so you might, would you describe this as a greener strain, or is it... What color and smell does it have?
Green, very green. Smells amazing. If you've smelled weed before, you know what amazing weed smells like, and there's nothing else I can do for others. I do know that out of everything I've used throughout this process, it was Trainwreck that healed me within months. It absolutely was Trainwreck.
Okay, this is what all our pothead listeners, I mean, what do we call them now? Cannabis medical patient listeners are
yes.
are excited about is what strains did you use? And I wanted to jump over this all over this question. And you started in on it, so now what strains have you used and which ones are most effective? Trainwreck, obviously.
Yes, Trainwreck is most effective. Everything else where I live has been mostly sativa, very, very sativa dominant, which in someone with Lyme disease isn't so great, although THC is, you know, so helpful. But it stimulates your fight or flight system even more, which is always consistently stimulated in Lyme disease. So people have like crazy panic attacks when they smoke or take any form of cannabis, and they tell me, well, I want to take it, but I feel like I'm dying during it. And I'm like, well, you're not. You're just freaking out in your brain. And if you understand the science, that really helps. But, yeah, I had to put up with sativa mostly whenever I quit getting train wreck.
And so you find that indica is it the THC, which is more common in the sativa? I mean, obviously, it's discussed in your book, so I'm hoping you'll reveal a little bit more information about your research.
Sativa.
It looks like your book is so intense. Like, I see there's a chapter on rage, stress, ADHD, and then the chapter 2 deals with the different constituents, the 3 species and strains.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, you really put the time in.
No, that was 4 months. I became a hermit for 4 months. My family.
That's why you're not talking
to me
so much.
I know, and everyone takes it personally. But no, okay. So sativa, right? It's more THC dominant. It mm-hmm. does have a bit of CBD, which varies depending on the strain. You know, like I just mentioned, Trainwreck, which is sativa dominant. I'm not sure what the exact ratio is, so don't quote me on it, but I'm just going to give an example. Say it's the sativa and 40 indica. So that's great mm-hmm. because THC I've found is so essential in killing Lyme disease and all those drug-resistant bacteria. However, you know, indica, it is CBD dominant, has lower THC, and by the way, CBD counteracts the anxiety that THC causes. So people don't experience anxiety. They get to sleep. They get to be all happy. And that's great and that's fun for symptom management and just for life. But you don't wake up feeling as great the next morning because, unfortunately, in the case of Lyme disease, you do need the higher THC or I did. I found I did. And that meant just going through, you know, the hard times with it for a few hours every night thinking I was going to die, but then I woke up feeling alive for the first time every morning. So that's the difference. And I have seen a lot of Lyme patients say that, I see people say, you absolutely need THC. Well, yeah, you know, it's better than a CBD extract. That's not the only cannabinoid with healing properties, of course, but so, yeah, some people say you need THC, and then others say, oh, I can't do THC. I had a horrible reaction. It almost killed me. And it's like, okay, when you take pharmaceuticals with Lyme, that happens times 10. It's just that this is very much an unknown area. So anytime it sparks a little reaction, people freak out because they don't have answers. They don't have a doctor to call. And we have been taught that we must ask someone who has a piece of paper that they paid for permission to move forward in life for some reason. So,
woohoo! Jump on the soapbox, baby. You look best up there.
What?
And then jump on the soapbox. I love that when Shelley White gets on the soapbox.
Yeah.
This is cool. So, hey, it sounds like you're very intelligent. And again, I'm probably petting your ego a little bit. And
no,
you're well read and all that stuff. Okay. And you put a mm-hmm. lot of work into this book, I can see. And what was your favorite part of writing the book? Like, what's your favorite recommended section?
Chapter.
The fun stuff.
Well, okay. If you're like me and talk to plants and they talk to you, and you know what I mean when I say that, then you will love the last chapter. It's called Final Conclusions About Cannabis, the Intelligence of Plants, and Bacteria's Elusive Role in Evolution.
Ooh. I'm excited about this. You should just do a whole episode where you read this chapter to our audience, please.
I can just do you a little fun synopsis at the beginning because I know you're into shamanism as well. I have found that learning to balance an equilibrium of heart-based consciousness and cranial brain. I say heart brain and cranial brain because the heart has actually more neural networks than the cranial brain. Anyhow, learning to balance an equilibrium between your feeling sense and your thoughts is so essential. Otherwise, you it was Eric Fromm. He says reason flows from the blending of rational thought and feeling. If the two functions are torn apart, thinking deteriorates into schizoid intellectual activity and feeling deteriorates into neurotic, life-damaging passions. So anyhow, the point is like the shamans, you have to learn to balance both and work with them productively. Once I finally got that, I was able to have a relationship with a plant. Although, you know, cannabis is a teacher plant, of course. And I honestly always hated it. I was easily conditioned to hate it. And for some reason at night, it was just so, like, calling out to me. You know, through that, like, deep knowing feeling sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first experience with that. And I started to understand how, yeah, it's important for me to sit here and learn about all these herbs to heal myself, but those are just words. There's so much more work that has to go into it. So anyhow, I talk about that and connecting with a plant. It's actually, despite the fact that I had never met anyone or talked to anyone with Lyme who had used cannabis, couldn't find anything online about it. For some reason, I trusted it completely. And as you know, shamans also say you should not work with a plant if you do not fully trust it. And for some reason, it's the only one I ever trusted, despite, you know, people telling me of all these other ones constantly that healed them. For some reason, I still didn't trust those plants as much. You know, I would try them, but there was still that, well, hopefully I'll heal. With cannabis, it was just like, we are doing this together, me and this plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go on to plant intelligence and describe how, just like the heart, they have a lot of the same functions as the brain. In fact, they have more senses. They have a lot more neural networks. I mean, the brain is the human brain is confined by the skull. You can think of the roots of a plant as their brain, and they aren't confined by anything. So they're just constantly, you know, downloading more data, because at the end of every day, they download all that data from the day, and they adjust to survive. So I talk about things like that, and then I talk about bacteria and evolution in the final part, which is that basically, you know, perhaps these infectious diseases, the bacteria isn't harmful. I would like to refrain from calling it harmful. That's very debatable because it's evolution. You know, how do you think we're here? And not only that, we did this. We are harmful, not the bacteria. We destroyed the earth. You know, we are killing off things. They don't have hosts to jump to. So they're just doing their natural, inherent nature. And we don't understand. And we think, oh, we have to make pharmaceuticals in response. Well, the problem with that is pharmaceuticals don't evolve. And so 5 years later, we're still using the same one to try and treat a disease that it worked on 5 years ago. However, the bacteria has been rapidly evolving for the past 5 years. So although people say bacteria are unintelligent, I hear it so many times, I can't help but think that is a very unintelligent statement.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention all the mutations that the bacteria go through with the drugs that we use.
Oh, they're just incredible.
And radiation
how they
therapy.
Respond. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm like excited about this book because it's so thorough. Would you say that this book, I mean, I know you're kind of blowing your own horn, but let me, I'll just say it outright because I think this book looks like it's a book for everybody, not just for people with Lyme.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how or why you wrote it?
No, I wrote it. Honestly, during the process, I didn't allow myself to read anything about Lyme and cannabis. I don't ever read people's posts on my article as it is, but I really just stayed away from the social media world. I didn't want to know people's opinions of me. I didn't want to know what people were saying in the private groups on Facebook about me or cannabis, yada, yada, because I feel like if I were to focus on the, you know, the aftermath of finishing and what it was for and how much I would make, it would completely ruin the creative process. So I just wrote everything that was in me and in the over 200 research papers I read, of course. But that's how I did it. I mean, I didn't have I want to target this audience. I just wanted to write from a source of truth, and then it will reach out to whoever resonates with that truth. So
I do
believe, though, like you're saying, it's for people who are, you know, deeply interested in plant medicine and, you know, the earth in general. Of course, anyone interested in medical cannabis, because as you can see in the outline, it covers tons of other conditions that apply to people who don't have Lyme disease. And it's also, of course, for people with Lyme disease.
Let's see. It seems like you have covered memory loss. sleep modulation as sleep apnea, PTSD, mental trauma, migraines, muscle spasticity. I didn't even know that was a word, but muscle spasticity. Excellent. And nerve pain, joint pain. Wow. Two of the book. Depression, anxiety, seizures, convulsions, rage, stress. Hey, ADHD, the lovely story of my life. Psychosis and symptoms of schizophrenia, nausea, vomiting, and what is this? Oh, it's wasting syndrome. How do you pronounce this word? Cachexia.
Just because I can write does not mean I can speak, so you're going to have to bear with me. I think it's cachexia.
Cachexia.
What it is it's basically a severe malnutrition to a, almost fatal extent. Illnesses such as mycoplasma, which is a Lyme disease co-infection, they scavenge your nutrients. So it becomes a malnutrition disorder. People with cancer get it as well. The problem is people get it from all different sources, and we have people in a lab trying to create one cure-all drug, and it's like, yeah, but you give that to someone with Lyme, and it blows up another symptom. There has to be something. There's never going to be a just cure-all pharmaceutical for anything.
I'm absolutely in alignment idea. You still there?
Yeah.
I'm clicking around, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to ask us a question. Ask Shelley a question if you like. So the number to call in if you are listening online is 347-855-8334. Again, to call in and ask a live question of the great Shelley White and her amazing story and boundless experience on the subject of cannabis and Lyme disease and other healing, please, 347-855-8334. Once again, 347-855-8334. And press the number 1 to indicate that you're ready to listen or ready to speak. So Shelley, you mentioned how you went into the closet, into the dark room to write, and you ignored the social media.
Mm-hmm.
Are there people out there that think you don't have Lyme still?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really. Yeah, I mean, it happens all the time, but I don't even notice them. Like, what they think has no relevance because I feel it's
but
true.
But are there
like
people
someone
out there that just generally disbelieve in Lyme as a disease?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know, but that's the thing about belief. It's blind faith. It's not proven.
Right, and that's what's really odd to me. I mean, most people that I find have the argument that you're possibly hinting at when you mention social media and criticism and comments thereof have these arguments that stand on the belief and it's founded on some sort of either scientific background. And then that gets questioned and it's theorized, but then it doesn't hold true under every circumstance. They fall back into something even more strange, like a belief that isn't founded in anything necessarily repeatable,
right,
methodological, logical, sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, as your friend and as a commentator on this radio show and as a person who's studied psychedelics a long time, I think it's really foolish for most people that aren't scientists and the great deal of people that are scientists and the people that follow these both categories of people and their so-called scientific opinions to limit the possibility of diseases and healing from them. I mean, I've seen, even just yesterday, I've had people call me and talk to me about what an individual would do after a bad trip in which they felt that they were possessed or their partner or their girlfriend was possessed. And it's like, well, there's a lot of herbal remedies for that. And the herbal remedies might just balance your minerals and you might be normal. But
or your
to say scientifically,
field.
Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. And just to say scientifically, well, I don't believe in that. We're just going to treat the herbalist side of it. It's kind of strange to me. And
that's
I think you and several other people would agree that plant intelligence is a real thing. And if plant intelligence is a real thing, who knows what else is out there?
Well, you know, therein lies the fundamental problem of, you know, our race just going down a hill is our brains are not connected with our hearts. So all we hear are the semantics. We hear the words. We hear the surface. But we can't feel. We have to combine that knowledge with intuition. We have to do the inner work. If we are going to read all the scientific or research papers, if we are going to even conduct them, if we're going to write about them, we have a giant responsibility that we have to take care of in solitude, which is going within. So you can sense if that's right or not. I think just because something's proven in a study, it's not enough. I mean, it is and it isn't. And when you experience something and it defies what science says, well, I mean, you're going to believe what you experience. So people who say Lyme disease isn't real, et cetera, it's just not real to them yet. So I understand. You know, we've been taught since we are young that we do not have this inherent genius in us, and we do. Each human does. But we've been taught we don't. So people grow up believing they don't. They believe there are a select few who do, which in this case are doctors. Unfortunately, those select few were also trained in school that they do not have that inherent genius and that they must have, you know, no connection with the patient. I don't know how you could connect with pharmaceuticals. Not that either. And they must just listen to everything they were told and not go home and try and learn more. And that's really interesting because they're constantly complaining new diseases are coming up, et cetera, but they're so unwilling to open their minds and try and learn it for themselves. And that's really the problem with most things health-wise is people's unwillingness to discover, you know, the information for themselves.
Absolutely. And so where I'm reading between the lines and listening as you speak, I'm hearing you say, the world and our society that you've experienced thus far needs a grander opportunity to go inward and to really seek intuition and the connection of the head and the heart.
Right. You know, it's just, it's almost like we have to go backwards in time if we wish to go forward as a species, you know, because of course the earth can survive without us. We cannot survive with it. So we need to go back to the times where we connect with the earth, that ancient way of living, like our indigenous ancestors did. And it's just absolutely necessary. And we're all going to be pushed eventually to that point. I mean, even if it's not in our lifetime, it's going to happen. Everything is going to crash because it must. And there are going to be some people who use that as an opportunity to go through it, and there are going to be some that are going to accept it as defeat. And say, for example, if it's the economy that crashed, if I can't get my medicine and I'm depressed, so I'm just going to kill myself, you know? So, yeah, we have to find the information for ourselves and go inwards, or else we're going to be screwed.
Like I said, you look great on a soapbox.
Yes, I forgot how to speak socially acceptable. When being alone for so many years.
you forgot how to be socially acceptable? Well, I think society forgot how to be naturally acceptable.
Yeah, they forgot how to be human.
Right, yeah. So, now that the story has been written and the life that you have led has led to a climactic book and its auspicious outcoming in many ways, you're going back in the cave. I heard that you were going to go some time to yourself.
Tomorrow I am leaving. Yeah, last week, you know, I just realized I'm so sick of all these energies. I'm so sick of all this stuff. You know, time is passing by fast because we spend it engaged in electronics and gossip and all this horrible stuff in the news, you know, I need to go back to that ancient way of life, the way of life I read about in John Steinbeck's books. But I didn't think I could find a place like that. And I Googled cabin on Craigslist, and I found the perfect cabin. It's like past the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I could even give directions. There's no Wi-Fi, no cell service. You can't get internet. There are no power lines, no smart meters, which is great. And yeah, there's nothing but, you know, books and the earth. There's 1,000 acres of mostly unexplored wilderness next to me. So that's exciting. It's on a lake with a sailboat that I don't know how to operate and don't trust myself with, but will probably do. So yeah, I'm going out there and I will go to the nearest town, I guess, when I have to, maybe once a week, and check my messages then. And it's really nice to feel like I don't have to feel bad for not answering a call.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited. And I'm excited too because I'm going to have to grow my own medicine and food there. And that's really going to lead me to developing deeper relationships with plants. So, yeah, I'm going tomorrow.
Excellent. And you're there indefinitely, huh?
Yeah. Well,
until
I decide to leave, honestly, that's my dream way of life. So.
You're retiring now. You're retiring at 24 or something?
No, I'm actually living at 24, becoming alive, but...
This is true.
Yeah. Not 24, 25.
Oh, sorry. Jeez.
It's okay, I said it too.
You earned 1 year.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So.
My only friends now are the elderly. Those literally are the only people I hang out with.
Oh. Hey... We don't hang out, so I don't qualify in that category. But yeah, I think of myself as your friend.
Well, you are, and I'm not just saying that because we're on air. But I mean, I have like a handful of people who I can hold good conversations with who don't look at me like I'm crazy when I say these things, which is basically everything I say. But there is a demographic of the older generations who did grow up in a way where they connected with the earth, and I connect with those people because of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. That is
And the interesting part is, the interesting part is getting well after doing that. You know, most people, it's when they're old, when they get that chance to wake up to all these things. Well, mine happened when I was young, and then I got better, and it's like, okay, so I'm going back into the world I was in. So I get to do something with it. Or I get to just fall right back into how I used to live and virtually learn nothing from the illness, which I think would be retarded. But yeah. So I do feel very lucky.
And you are. You're absolutely lucky. I'm a little bit jealous.
You are just as lucky.
So... along the lines of crazy talk, because you reference it a lot as if you do it often, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything that crazy today. So, crazy talk about this little microbe stuff called bacteria and its effect on evolution.
Mm-hmm.
What are your theories on this? Because my personal experience with that, and I know I'm not focusing a lot on Lyme disease, but I think that this whole conversation is really going to open a lot of people's eyes to what goes on in the microverse as compared to the macroverse, the big things that you see around
right.
you. Even you see your skin and your hair and your eyes and you think, oh my gosh, I'm so small in the universe. But it's really a giant, giant universe
right.
of
the giant
your
network.
Organs. And really... those whole organ systems are in many ways populated and on somewhat of a consciousness level, they're piloted by bacterium. And little tiny microbes.
Absolutely. I think, you know, for example, this is so bizarre. We have these infectious diseases growing in number, correct? So what do? We develop more of the things that is making them grow. Because like you said, everything is connected. You know, the Gaian system is supposed to be itself regulating, biodegrading, but we create more pharmaceuticals, and pharmaceuticals do not biodegrade at all. So we're just messing up the earth more, and that means we're messing up ourselves more. So we're just walking our species to extinction if we do not wake up to that fact. And it's so bizarre to me how, for example, if you told a person, would you get rid of oxygen entirely? Well, of course not. You know, you need it to live. Okay, but same thing with the earth. You know, that's one and the same, but people still don't get that somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And until we do, I really don't know what would happen to us. I mean, the earth will destroy us. It will win. We can't be in a competition with the earth ever because it doesn't need us to exist, and we need it.
Yes, absolutely. So have you done any personal experiencing or experimenting that you want to share about that helps you, and maybe it would help our listeners to go through a process of sealing their bacterial colony that we call our bodies, you know, the consciousness of the microbes that live within us. Anything to add there that you've experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to do it every single day. I do this thing where I work with my consciousness modules. That's one of the practices. You could call it inner child work, but, you know, there's so many different versions of that. So consciousness modules is a technique developed by Eric Burns, and basically it kind of goes against, like, the, you know, the new spirituality movement, which says separate your ego from, or your consciousness from your ego. Well, that's just silly, because I did that before and I felt pretty numb. So instead, this works with your consciousness, your different consciousness states, different inner child states, to heal them and bring them in alignment. So, for example, I do meditation or hypnosis for inner child sometimes for it. And all of a sudden, this memory from when I'm in, you know, third grade or something will come up. And by the end of it, I realize, well, that's why I've been so weird in relationships or yada yada my entire life. And so then I tell that part of myself, it's okay. You know, we deserve to have good relationships, but we need to work together. And right now, we're not working on the same page. And, you know, then I commit to that part of me to making an effort to do that. So we don't have to distance ourselves from other parts of ourselves, I guess what I'm trying to say. Another thing I do is called body talk. It feels extremely weird at first, and that's kind of the fun in it. But it's literally just laying there, going from one part to the other, and in your head talking to, I suppose you could do it out loud too. And saying, you know, what do you need? How do you feel? If there's pain in it, think in your head, just like what texture would this pain have? You know, use your extrasensory perception, which is what people call a sixth sense, but we all had at birth, and put a color to it, all those kind of things. And then I like to focus on it, to put energy towards it and think of a certain color, a healing color. And I don't use a color based on something I read, like this color is for that, yada, yada. It kind of comes to you which one feels best for that part.
Mm-hmm.
So I do those two things the most, the inner child work and body talk.
And I've also had several body talk sessions. And I think they're very intuitive, very
miraculous,
powerful.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to try that. And once upon a time, I guess I'll share one of my personal experiences. Okay. I was taking a drink of San Pedro, which is sometimes called Wachuma or Achuma, and it's used by Native Americans in And I made some for myself and my partner. And we were deep into the experience, which lasts something of 15 or 16 hours for me, generally. And sometimes 12 for other people. But generally, it lasts a long time. And I think at about hour 10, I was going through a process of touching my shoulder and experiencing matrilineal grandfather and grandfather's father's suffering. And I was going through this lovely process of feeling all these emotions and healing and you know, doing like forgiveness and moving healing into that area. And it was a very interesting sort of comparison to later on in years down the line, I think 3 years, 2 years down the line, I had a body talk session and it felt like Tishner was doing what I was experiencing in that session with the San Pedro and the matrilineal grandfather thing. So it was very powerful. It was like, wow, the medicine did that for me, and this person who's probably never had that medicine, never knew me, did that too. So
yeah,
it's very powerful stuff.
Oh, very. You know, it's almost miraculous, the results when used in serious illnesses like this, you know, where the changes that are seen are so drastic. I guess I probably forgot to mention the most important part of the process, which is an ongoing, you know, moment-to-moment practice, but it's basically pretty simple. It's letting yourself feel. You know, we have limits like, okay, I'm too sad, and you're not too sad. Our society, you know, when we were young, they didn't teach us how to deal with that science or that sadness. So then we don't know how to work through it, and we should do it with pharmaceuticals. So you learn how to feel, and the way you do not become overwhelmed with it is at the same time learning to keep in balance your consciousness and your brain too. So you're not too much in your head or too much in your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense? And also I started learning energy-wise how much it affects the healing process. And I found it really important to learn the difference between me and not me in regards to energies, because, you know, a person walks in the room and all of a sudden I feel really angry. And if I stop and think about it, was I angry before? Did anything happen to make me angry? No. Okay, well, then that's not me. So I'm able to hold that at the forefront of my mind and not become it. And that's so, so crucial to healing, to living a life where you're not just being thrown about by energies, but are able to work with them. And that's really the most important thing to me in healing and life in general.
Well, you are such a wise young lady.
Thank you.
So that's amazing that someone in your generation is talking about those things, emotions and how they extend out of the body into possibly neighboring friends or people in the room. I think we all know about this stuff. We go to funerals and people are grieving, and you can feel that energy.
Well, the brain, actually, it listens to the heart neural networks first, and it responds to those. A lot of people don't realize that because they don't have their consciousness focused in their heart as well. But the electromagnetic field of the heart can actually sense another person's levels up to 10 feet away. And then, you know, that goes to the brain, that changes the mood, et cetera. And it also can even synchronize the two people's brainwaves. So another person's energy, you can become it. It's so insane. And so it's so important to understand the difference between me and not me when it comes to energies, because you keep picking up bad ones all the time. One day you wake up and you have chronic depression. There's no known root cause, because there isn't one. It wasn't your sadness.
Yeah, I mean, it could be even the sadness of the person next door to you that you rarely see, and your walls are just close and touching.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
But here's my soapbox. You don't turn off the television long enough to feel. I mean, this is like such a valuable thing. I think there's even a quote in one of my favorite songs that there, the quote from Nacho Bear and Medicine for the People is,
oh my
there
God,
is no
like,
medicine. Oh, is that you like them?
I listen to it every day of my life, like religiously.
Oh my gosh.
Would
yes.
Anyone else
yes.
know that?
Good vibes.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
There is no medicine in the television. There's no medicine in the television. And, you know, he uses the word medicine kind of loosely like Native American people because he is Native people. And I know, I feel, and I see what he means. There is no medicine in the television. It's like, hey. And he's not just talking about how it's not a drug or it's not a plant, it's not a herb or anything. He's talking about how that the medicine is life and that television is not that.
Yeah, and you know, you made such a great point by kind of reading the words underneath that, which is that oh, sorry, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Which is that when we're watching television, we're not feeling, you know? So yeah, there's no medicine. We absolutely have to be willing to feel.
Absolutely. And that's part of the evolutionary path. That's like, you know, the bacteria that live and die and breed generationally inside of ourselves. If we can't teach them what it feels like to be grieving, what it feels like to be in love, then how can we ourselves in the macro evolve if we can't even evolve the micro? That's my soapbox.
Yeah, you know, it's so true. And all I can tell myself is just work on your inner stuff first. You know, because so much of it takes place in the invisibles in life. And I haven't developed a very elegant language to describe a lot of it. And so people, they reach out to me actually more about basically feeling, how to feel, than anything else. And in short, what they're all wanting is a permission to feel, to be human, to embrace their innate human nature. And it's just, I do feel that's one of the problems that can, you know, actually be seen as a root in everything, like problems with healing, more diseases, politics, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely. And so let's see if there's any commentators, friends, fans, and otherwise commenting on our Facebook. Did you get any of the social media response to people wanting to have their question read aloud on the show?
On no, but I didn't post in any of the like cannabis and lime groups.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, that's fine. I don't care.
I'm just really bad at talking about myself all the time.
I heard you say that yesterday, and I discourage, at least till the end of this interview, feeling bad about anything, really.
But you don't promote me to go on about how sad my story is, so that's different.
Are you having a sad story? Because if you were, I'd be grieving. I think you're having an amazing life experience, and it's a chronicle of how other people could be taking the medicine that is you and your experience and transforming it alchemically into them and their experience so that they don't have to go through the same dark night of the soul. And that's what your book's about, right?
I'm happy every day of my life. I experience happiness. I recently learned that not everyone does that. That was very foreign to me. But that's the thing is people want to focus on how bad was it when you have Lyme? Oh, I had financial struggles, and doctor said this to me, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you do realize none of that, it literally doesn't exist anymore, right? You're choosing. You say you don't want that pain anymore, but you're showing me otherwise you're choosing it. So that's when I have a problem talking about my story when people, they promote that, you know?
Yeah.
that's not healthy for either one of us.
Okay, so I know there's a huge evolution of our topic today, and I really want to close on what is probably trending as the most potent thing for the United States of America to sort of synchronize itself with nature, the global planet, and revitalize the economy, and talk more about the pot, the weed, the cannabis. Let's close down on that, and I would love your opinion, Miss White, on what strains are important that you've researched besides Trainwreck, or that, you know, what within the cannabis network of things that are coming online now that it's becoming a real legitimate legal broad span medicine, what is out there to cultivate, to watch, to help along in your own opinions, experiences?
Right. To answer that first question, it's such a great question. It's so commonly asked. Which one is the most important? Every single one. We need to realize that. Which one is going to be best for you in this moment? I can't tell anyone that. I can tell them the facts on paper that I can read, but I don't know the other things that are going on in their body. So it's really, you know how it is with herbs. You can tell your response fairly quickly. So it's all about just, you know, trying different strains and just starting with low doses. Like I said, with Lyme disease, a lot of people, they really detest sativa dominant, high THC. And I understand that because those were the worst experiences, but those were very painful hours when I started treating myself with it. I mean, I took a tablespoon of oil a night, which is pretty unheard of. But I would do it at times. So my family didn't know I was doing it and in that much pain. They don't want to use that much, though, and that's fine. I understand. I'm just saying for me, I needed it. The problem is if you get higher CBD, or CBD extracts, which is the whole new thing that everyone's into, you just don't get all the healing components. And, you know, they work synergistically together, and that's the great benefit of them.
And I want to jump on your soapbox, too, and be tall for a moment. There's nothing, to our listeners, there's nothing better than growing your own medicine, growing your own plants, growing your own garden, and tending to it instead of going and getting an extract. And you're not getting the entirety of the experience and the healing. I don't understand how people don't get this. People offer me drugs all the time, maybe because I do this radio show. They offer me plant medicines all the time. And I say, hey, I don't take anything that I don't make myself.
I think that is, you know, that's 100% true. However, I do also understand that there are some people that just simply, you know, they can't do it yet. They will get to a point where they can, but they're so debilitated that, you know, even making a sandwich is the most confusing thing in the world when you have these illnesses. So, yeah, you do get extracts during that time. I got mine mostly from people I knew personally. But I found eventually because, you know, I saw that same problem that I'm not getting a deep connection. And if I don't, you know, this isn't going to work. And I found that, you know, there is still the spirit of it in the tincture. There truly is. But you have to work a lot harder to bring your energy filled out to connect with it. So I totally agree that growing the plant, you know, developing a relationship with it, nurturing it, it makes all the difference in the world. For example, you know, like you mentioned, you're just ordering extracts from random places. You don't know the environment they were grown in. If they were grown in a negative environment, they were shown no love, they won't work as good as another strain, the same exact strain, that was shown tons of love. And sometimes I will get some cannabis and I say this weird thing and everyone who's with me, which is about two people usually, they think I'm crazy, but I'll just say, this cannabis is not, you know, grown in a good environment. It was grown in a sad one. But how do you know? And it's just the energy of it. And so growing it and cultivating those relationships during it, is the absolute best way.
And I mean, I don't know if anyone realizes this, but my acupuncturist and doctor of traditional Chinese medicine, he always used to tell me, and I believe him. I haven't actually slaughtered any of my animals as livestock, and I have never really grown livestock animals and eaten them, but he used to slaughter animals that he was raised on a farm. And he said, the more you love animals before you kill them, the sweeter they are. And I'm like, really? Wow. And the same is true with plants. The same is true with herbs. I grew kale this season, and it's like almost 100 degrees in Arizona now, but this kale is sweeter than anything I can buy at the store, and it's the same species, supposedly.
Right. You know, so many people would think, what you just said about the animals, they would immediately think, well, that's cruel, because those animals are alive. They don't understand plants are, too, of course. But, you know, for our indigenous ancestors, and they had to kill their own animals, of course, but, you know, for food. And they said the same thing as you were just saying, that it makes it a better process to love the animals, because it's deeply respecting the earth and the ecosystem. And, you know, what's so funny is there's this Native American tale that disease started when the white man came over here and he wasn't respecting the animals that he was killing. And so nature retaliated and, you know, brought illness to man. And the plants, because they're so empathetic, felt, you know, the sadness of that. And so they said, for every illness, there will be a plant. We will take care of one, each of us. So it's pretty cool. Wow.
Absolutely. And I found that to be absolutely true. My experience are almost always is a plant. And I've been very excited about hearing about plants that are just outside the scope of science. And like stinging nettles, for example, is used for allergies. And my plant medicine teacher from California talked about stinging nettles, and we'd go pick them, and he'd be showing me, oh, you can pick them with your fingers if you do it this particular way, and you can put them right in your mouth and not get stung. And I was like, wow, okay. There must be some sort of a function for this plant. And, you know, part of the function is the usage of the consumption of its minerals and its nutrients, and it gets rid of allergies. And I found out recently that there was a there's a group of plants in Australia growing in the rainforest. Australia is like this continent that we in the United States really don't like to talk about too much, especially in the botanical arena. And I mean, I have tons of books, and maybe out of all the encyclopedias, there is 10 pages at most. Out of all the books that I own that have anything to do with the botany in Australia and the herbology of Australia, they have a whole species of trees that are, in many ways, producing the same silica-like, silica-based nettles, stinging nettles. And they're all this whole, like, this whole rainforest basically stings people. And they don't even, like, talk about it. And I was like, why isn't this more studied? If it's painful medicine, it must have potent benefits.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about that. You know, I've never heard of it either.
Yeah, it's strange thing, and at the same time, it was enlivening. I felt excited, and we hear about the western rainforests of the Amazon, but we don't hear so much about the Australian rainforests.
Yeah, you know, that's very true. I've heard actually nothing about it. Like you say that, and I can totally admit, I was completely ignorant to it. I was like, Australian rainforest? They have one?
Isn't that weird? Even in Arizona, there's a rainforest. A rainforest is any forest in which you get a certain amount of rainfall per day in inches. And I'm not sure if it's year-round and if snowfall counts, but I'm pretty sure that the New Mexico border of Arizona, where its high elevation is considered a cloud forest or a rainforest in the same sort of way that they have rain forests and the highlands of Mexico and Oaxaca where the magic mushrooms grow and stuff. It's like that energy, biome, and level of humidity. In Arizona!
Yeah. I mean, the Amazon Trail growing up ruined us all. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, we do focus a lot on the Amazon. And we think, oh, to get back to nature, we have to travel somewhere like that and to disconnect entirely. And I thought this too recently, or up until recently, that I would have to go to the Amazon, the, you know, rainforest, and yada, yada. And then I found out I could do it about 2 hours from where I am right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I respectfully have seen, and we are on the topic of the Amazon, I respectfully have seen and abstain from further spreading information about it, but I've seen at least three people on mainland in California and in Arizona all cultivating ayahuasca plants. I mean, that's mm-hmm. two different plants, but they were doing it. And you know, I'd go to those places and I get to talk to the plants, and the medicine for me is just touching the leaves and being like next to the plants and knowing that they're taken care of. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, but that's the difference, is you're doing it for those reasons. Many people in, you know, the Western world, they do it for the sake of getting, you know, messed up and being able to tell people about it. But I suppose that's why more people tend to flock to the Amazon than people in the U.S., although they're even hard to find, who grow it, is because in the Amazon, everyone there utilizes it as medicine. Everyone there works with you on an emotional, spiritual level. And in the States, I mean, they'll only work with you on a physical level, and then they're disconnected from you.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose that's really the only difference, or it's a big difference, between a medicine man or woman and shaman and someone, a healer. Well, I wouldn't call it a healer, a physician in the United States, or some people who, like you mentioned earlier, are herbalists and just they take this and this and this, and you're like, I want more depth. Well, that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of beingness to function as a shaman or a medicine man. And the beingness almost always gets in the way of societal duties and jobs and timeliness. It's a very difficult process. And if I was ever at one point self-labeling, I'd like to disclaim that I am a shaman and that I'm a medicine man, because I think that's not really, there's not room while I'm part of society. There's a chance that if I went to a cabin like you're describing and there's no society and maybe my neighbors are around and they get sick, there's a good chance that I could function as a medicine man during that little portion of my life in that place, because it's more tribal.
But the thing is that, you know, refraining from labeling a shaman, you know, that's very wise, I'm sure, because shamanism in those cultures, it isn't seen as a profession. It's just a way of life. And the thing is, it's most likely, almost certainly, something we are all born with the ability to do, just we don't journey into it deep enough. And we don't journey through the darkness. We don't let it teach us. A lot of shamans actually get sick first, and they learn through that. But when labeling I'm a shaman, it sounds like it's a career, and it's not. It's a way of life. I mean, I'm not one. I'm just saying, from what I understand.
I also have to say to anyone who's read my blogs or listened to the show and they send me emails, just that they send you emails, Shelley. I mean, I don't really... I and the show and all the guests on the show don't really advocate crossing borders and boundaries, breaking rules and laws, and causing destruction to things that society thinks are orderly. And so, you know, if somebody messaged me, like recently I've had at least two of these, where can I do ayahuasca? Can I do it in San Diego? Do you know someone in San Diego who can give me ayahuasca? It's like, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't know if I can give that recommendation. I can say, in California under religious licensing, the Santa Daime Church in Los Angeles provides ayahuasca. And then same mm-hmm. here in Arizona, if you're looking to get cannabis, and if you're a listener in Arizona, please go follow the rules. Get your cannabis card. If you're a person who needs to visit a doctor, I mean, they have doctors everywhere. Just look them up online. And the medicine is ready to be picked up or delivered or cultivated by you, and we're happy to encourage that. But our show, talks a lot about this stuff, we do have to disclaim that we don't advocate breaking the law. We do advocate changing the law, and we do advocate treating the planet better and treating medicines as not just the pharmaceuticals might be treated, but treating them more respectfully and ideally unscheduling and allowing people to go back to a way of life that is more like Shelley would describe, tribal and heart-minded. I like that term.
Well, I mean, since I'm a guest, I'm allowed to advocate whatever.
Well, you are. You're allowed to say anything you want.
Break the law, but I'm saying by all means, don't always follow it just because you're told to. That's very dangerous. Follow the laws of the land above laws of man. And go like, oh, I'm going to go to jail. Well, you're already in jail if you're only following the laws of man. I mean, there's no freedom or life in that. So for me,
absolutely.
It is always
fun. Absolutely. I mean, I've had my friends and guests, such as Ross Heaven, who is, I think he's from the UK, and his show is so funny. He says everybody, like, in the pharmaceutical industry, because he previously, I guess, worked there, sold drugs to doctors and did that whole circuit. He's like, everybody is just a scam artist and should totally, this is a great, funny episode. And he's very British, like, I'm ready to fight anybody who says I'm not a shaman, that white people cannot be shamans, and that I can't cure cancer with my natural medicine from the Amazon. And then he's like, we're straight up curing cancer, so fuck off.
Man, I love people like that who will just tell it how it is, or how, you know, they think it is, at least. I think it's a mistake following the law. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think many times it's an absolute mistake following the law or the Ten Commandments.
Oof. Well, I got it out of you, finally.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. A lot of people, they use Christianity as an excuse to somewhat be lazy and just do what they're told always, because the Bible says you must follow the laws of the land. And so I suppose they think they're going to burn in hell. They do not. Unfortunately, the laws of the land are the earth, but they're mistaking it for man. And so in following those, they could actually end up committing what the Bible would call a sin. It's way worse. You know what I mean? So it's just so backwards how twisted we have been conditioned.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's like, you know, get connected. Go take your shoes off. Go stand on the ground, not the cement, the ground. And then listen to your heart, your intuition, and then make a decision as to whether or not this is a sound and just rule or law or... And those are really important things for everyone to do. And again, we're not outright advocating breaking the law. We are encouraging everyone to follow their own set of morals, ethics, and really their own rules.
Yeah, good way to put it. You're encouraging everyone to find out for themselves as opposed to just listening to what they're told. You're not just saying be rebellious for the sake of being rebellious.
Yeah, I mean, and I was taught most of the time, because I learned from more pagan community members than I'd learned from Christian communities, is that you harm ye none, do no harm, first do no harm, and then do as you will, do as you please, and make your own laws, in other words. And
right.
I think those are really great principles to live by for most people. And they're even yogic. When I crossed over to learn yoga instruction, one of the first things is ahimsa, non-harming. And what people don't realize is, first, you know, non-violent. That's great. Be peaceful. Be non-violent. But you have to be non-violent to yourself, too. You can't be inside
Absolutely.
Your head saying, oh, no, you're not doing that right, or you're not good enough, or you should feel guilty over this. Doesn't work.
Right.
That's not ahimsa.
Willpower. People are like, oh, I did it through willpower, which essentially means bottled it up inside and didn't show anyone. I was strong enough to keep it in. That's not very healthy.
Yeah. So, Shelley, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't know about you, but I'm constantly hearing people complaining about the world. It's falling apart and all this stuff. And I think it is the most, this seems like such a fascinating time to be alive because, you know, if you look back at the past generation for quite a while now, no one wanted more. They just wanted to go to school, do what they were told, quit feeling at a certain age, say the right words. You can't cry in public. You can't do this or that. You believe this religion, all the other ones, they're horrible and Satan worshipers. And I had asked my mom the other day, I said, have you ever sat and just asked yourself, what if the Bible is just written by a man? I'm not hating on Christianity, by the way. I'm just saying that now we are asking those questions. When before, people had so much fear that they wouldn't even dare ask questions for themselves. And I love seeing there is a demographic of younger people who are wanting more, who are engaging in consciousness, but they're not doing it via what they're told. They're actually going and doing the inner work. And even the people who I talk to who are completely lost, the fact that they're reaching out to me means they want more. Our younger generations want more. So we aren't going to be the same as our elders are now.
So, wow, you are all over Facebook. Amazing. I would like to let you know I'm having a few technical difficulties. So you might have to tell me if you are feeling ready to wrap up our conversation. How are you feeling?
I'm actually feeling good, whatever works for you.
Okay. I feel it was really important for you to say, and I would like to reiterate what Shelley said, if you're just tuning in and listening, about how, and it was downplayed a lot because we moved on fast, about how all the cannabis strains are important. I mean, we moved on to topics adjacent to that and how cultivation is important, especially now that it's becoming legal, especially now that it gives us the greatest chance in the United States of America to turn the economy around, and that might be opinion, but I was reading an article recently that said that the closest way to making $1 million is joining into the green rush, you know, the cannabis industry. And it's not just about that. It's about changing the face of the earth, stop cutting down the rainforest, start planting cannabis, start doing what George Washington was doing, growing hemp for industrial uses. Amazing. Hey, it's what our country was founded on. What? So to reiterate, Shelley, the importance that you were saying was it's not just about one strain. It's not just about the train wreck. The green. It's about all of it, right?
Yeah, correct. And, it's so just like frustrating because, we're getting to this place and all this hope that people are waking up, about reconnecting with the earth because suddenly everyone wants to legalize cannabis. And then all of a sudden they're doing the very same thing that got us to this place in the first place, which is they're excited about it because they're saying it's going to be good for our economy. Our economy, not our earth, our economy, not our bodies, our economy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I absolutely agree. And I want to be aware that I use terminology to motivate people in the same sense. But yeah, it's, I guess the reason that I'm a little bit more focused on that is because I really don't like some of the industries that have come about, where we're taking metals and plastics and we're synthesizing them. I'm really against that in some regards because I think we have all the technology we need to live and to advance ourselves and possibly even to explore other planets without synthesizing plastic and metal together to protect ourselves in our fucking cars.
In fact, that might be the very thing that is the most dangerous for us, trying to seek safety by doing this thing.
Yeah. Well, it's just strange times we live in, and you're right. They're very exciting, strange times.
Absolutely.
Let's see, where can we get your book? Because I want three. I want to give them out on the street corner.
Oh, that would be very nice of you. You can get it at cannabisforlyme.com. Like I said, you can get it on Amazon too. But I highly recommend going just to cannabisforlyme.com because you get such detailed information so you can decide if it's for you. People are still asking a lot of questions like, oh, that book looks awesome. But my problem is that I live in a state where it's not legal. And see, those are the kind of questions that my book was founded on, and it answers all of those things. So just go look at the outline on there and see if it looks like it's going to cover what, you know, you want. If not, you can also email me at cannabisforlyme@gmail.com for questions related to the book or the topic.
Absolutely. This is a really awesome website. So visit, and it's in our description of this episode. So visit cannabisforlyme.com and click on that link there, and it'll take you to, looks like it forwards to limebook.com. Is that?
Yeah, that's where he has all the other books on Lyme disease.
Okay. And so the Biomed Publishing Group is the group that published it, and you can see lovely author Shelley White over here as an image of, there's super lovely, and then there's the, oh my gosh, not so lovely because I've got Lyme disease and no one knows what's going on with me and how to help me. And then the now. You see the before and after pictures is really fun. I think that's on our slideshow tonight, too, if you're listening. Shelley really is beautiful whether she is suffering a difficult experience or not.
Thank you.
I have to say, and I think that everyone listening to this, everyone that you've met, written to, and that may benefit from your story or that may just benefit from any one of the stories that are being told in this generation or previous generations, they're all moving us towards healing and helping. And I have a good sense of faith that we're all evolving in the correct direction. Hey, and if we aren't, the earth can turn us right off. Shake us right off like fleas.
Right, absolutely.
So the best hope we have, partially in my opinion, is described in this good book. And partially in my opinion is described in the book of Genesis, which I do think, and I'm rather soapboxy too, I do think one of the trees might have been cannabis.
I do think, I'm not sure if that's the one that talks about stoning your wife if she touches your brother's genitals accidentally. So, but
I think Genesis was the Adam and Eve book. Maybe that's in the later versions. I don't know. I didn't read it all the way through.
Yeah, that's because people don't really mention the First Testament for a reason. And that's a different topic, I suppose, religion than all of this. Although not really.
Oh, I get it. Stoning. Oh, if you get stoned. Oh, that's so great. Shelley, you should rewrite the Bible for weed.
Okay, never mind. Okay, I'll just say. That's sometimes, not just when I'm high, was this just invented by someone like me and my buddy sitting here being like, oh, we should put this and see if people really do it, you know?
Right. Double entendres. Yeah.
Not saying that's what I believe in God. I'm just saying that we shouldn't be afraid to ask those questions. If something is going to guide our way of life, we better get to know it deeply and intimately and the meanings of it and see if they match up with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm disappointed we didn't get any caller questions. This is always a welcome in our shows. Call in, ask a question, and I'm hopeful that we will have you on in the future, and hopefully we'll get to answering some questions. I don't know if you're going to get phone service, so maybe I should, like, what should I do? I should record an episode with you. You could actually record an episode out in your wilderness shack. And send me. Sorry, it's a glamorous cabin. Yes.
And well, not either, but yeah.
Mirror. Well, okay.
But I don't think a mailman can make it out there. So I am going to go into town every once in a while, like once a week. I can definitely come back on and will be in touch with you still. There's also this nature center a little down the way that has service, so I can go there. And it's so crazy to think I'm going to have to do things like that to get on the internet, which I can do in a second, and do in a second a lot right now.
Hmm. Well, then that'll be very good for you. Good medicine, as Knocko Bear would say.
Yes. So, all right, well, thank you for having me on. I always enjoy speaking with you. I always have, like, it's like a brain exercise, so my brain is worn out at the end. So I really appreciate you having me back on, and, yeah, it was just great.
Well, you're thinking on your feet, and you're learning quite a bit, and I'm learning a lot, too, and hopefully if I get around to reading the entirety of this book and the arsenal of other books that I read simultaneously with my ADHD, I will have learned much more than I was anticipating just by looking at the cover. I really encourage everyone to at least go to this website and see how much work Shelley put into this, because I'm kind of shocked. It's very, very all-encompassing book. So I'm very excited about getting a copy of this. And they can follow you at Twitter if you're going to Twitter page while you're out in the cabin. How do you follow you on Twitter? It's Shelley M. White. Or how does it?
Shelley with an E-Y at the end. And then underscore M underscore W. I do believe I included it at the end of my bio.
Shelley, EY underscore M underscore W. And they can also email you cannabisforlime@gmail.com.
Yes. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/ShelleyMarieW. S-H-E-L-L-E-Y.
Shelley Marie W., excellent. And you can connect with us also on Facebook if you're a listener through Blog Talk Radio. We do encourage you to become a fan. Find us on facebook.com/shamanicherbs or facebook.com/entheoradio, entheoradio.com. And so you can also find us on Twitter, entheoradio. You can find me, Captain QT Alchemy, QT Alchemy, anywhere, and then some. And Shelley, we really hope you come back on the show and that you have some amazing experiences out in the wild to share.
Yes.
Next time.
I'll definitely be sharing them with you. And yeah, just thanks again for having me on. It's always great.
And since the episode might be a little bit technically disinclined, because I'm having trouble with the studio feature on blogtalkradio.com here, thank you very much. I pay for Blog Talk Radio, and I don't encourage other people to. we're going to hang up now, and I'm not sure if it's going to disconnect right away. So, listeners, we are ending the show. Bye.